back on the Talking Calcio podcast, now joined by Claudio Villalobos with Nashville Total Sports. My guy, Claudio. We have a lot to catch up to, Claudio. A lot to catch up to. Nashville had back-to-back home wins against Columbus and also Toronto, 3-0 and 1-0. Both of them are shutouts, which is impressive. But I bring this up right now. I know it's immediately right off the bat for you, but Nashville now have back-to-back away losses. Does that raise a little bit of a concern to you?
It does. It does because, I mean, my opening statement, Nick, about this whole thing, which I didn't include for this, the Columbus game, which is obviously a huge, nice surprise in terms of the score. Mm-hmm. I was going to say that I did this off microphone with you, that the seems to me there is a big contrast in a couple of things. First of all, the way this team performs against teams in Nashville, in Jody's Park, it kind of contrasts a little, or maybe much, I don't know, against the way they play outside of Nashville. So, you know, that's one thing. And now, I take it like this. I'm going to return a question. Was this because in the case of Toronto, they were playing a 13th place team, and now they went back to San Diego and they're playing the first team of the West Conference? I kind of hesitate to say this, but is Nashville going to be bullying on the easy ones and kind of putting their head down on the big ones? I don't know. But as I said that, then somebody could come back to me and say, hey, well, but Columbus is one of the big ones, and they still beat them 3-0. So you see what I am right now, kind of confused in what to say about these teams, you know, about the performance of this team in those three particular games.
Yeah, I think my big takeaway, Claudio, is just the lineups that BJ Callahan selected for those matches. I mean, we look at the Toronto match, even though it was a 1-0, very small score line there, he puts Gaston Brugman and Eddie Tagseth in the middle there, whereas as of late, the Philadelphia match, the Inter-Miami match, the Columbus match, all those matches, even San Diego, it's been Tagseth and Yazbek. And I think the legs, the stamina management, I wouldn't say it's been bad. I just think that's the primary reason why Nashville kind of slipped up on those away games. I mean, minus the whole Joe Willis thing in the Inter-Miami match. That's besides the point. But the San Diego match specifically, on that first goal, yeah, there were things to point out when it came to the center back pairings with Walker Zimmerman and Jason Palacios. But also, too, you have to look at it from, and I mentioned this with Brett Kern earlier, that Nashville, they like to counter-press, and so does San Diego. And when Nashville counter-presses and it's done incorrectly, which is what happened, their two midfielders that are Tagseth and Yazbek were already in the attacking third, which essentially is Nashville with their pants caught between their tail caught between their legs. And then that's what led to the open attack for San Diego to say, you know what, you guys countered press, we can do that too. And it led to the goal.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know if it's a good word to say this, and it would be our midfielders got swamped.
Yeah, oh yeah.
By San Diego, you know, I mean, pretty much. And you know, when you look at, but, and at the same time, go back to, again, to the Toronto game. I mean, Nashville was favored by over 70% to win that game. You know, they'd won it. Maybe the score wasn't what the fans expected. They expected more, especially after beating Columbus 3-0. But, I mean, that would have been actually something to worry about if Nashville doesn't win that game. Now, I did expect it more in San Diego. But I guess Mikey, I mean, he had BJ's number for some reason. Mm-hmm. He was able to say, hey guy, well, if you're gonna press me up front, then I'm gonna swap your middle. I'm gonna make sure that your wings that don't come up like it happened very even. Nahar was able to actually do this last stop. Lovis wasn't able to help much on the other side, and that really took care of business. I mean, that, besides the fact that in a game like that, you know this as well as I do, Nick, in a game against good teams, any chance you get, you better score it. You better make sure it goes in, because if it doesn't, either you're going to still lose the game or you're going to lose it by more goals. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the fact that in this case, Joe Willis was up to par in terms of detaining the penalty kick, which that's a nice performance from Willis again. And the other thing that the referee actually called the game before, you know, it was a good call. He already called it, you know. Mm-hmm. But still, that tells you that maybe the score was short.
Yeah.
For what happened in that game as well.
And you bring up a good point about the calls in that match, Claudio, in San Diego. Even the Apple TV broadcast brought up that Hani Mukhtar looked like he was fouled in the box in the 77th minute. I'd agree to that, and I'm not trying to play favoritism because it's Nashville, we cover Nashville, whatever, but that was that moment, and also Jacob Schaffelberg, I thought got clipped by the goalkeeper in the 82nd or 83rd minute, late in the match. It might have been the extra time that they gave, the injury time. I'm not too sure on that, but those two incidents, I thought both were worthy of penalties.
At least one of them. I mean, I'm still wanting to see a better TV shot of Mukhtar's. I wasn't able to actually say it looked to me much like that. But the one that I really caught my sight on that side was Jacob's Schaffelberg. I think that was for sure something that it didn't even last anything. Have anybody checking into it?
No, and he was down for a good bit of time too.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that second one, like I said, the Mukhtar one, I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt just because I didn't have the TV shot that would tell me for sure. But in the case of Schaffelberg, I believe there was something there to be called, to be honest with you. You know, and it's just like one of those things, you know, and the team went there. One of the things that I'm going to say I'm worried about, because I'm sure BJ, the way he works at everything, he's already working into it and inside. But we got to realize a couple things. If Nashville keeps going further into the cup, into the Lamar Hunt Cup, mm-hmm. the at least one game, and maybe the last, no, I mean now, the last game, the final, we will play somewhere else. Either Austin or Minnesota. Okay. I believe that, yeah, I mean, could change, but that would be it.
Yeah.
And that means that if the team performs like the way they did in Miami and they did in San Diego, well, I mean, he's going to have a problem right there, because it needs to be somewhere in the middle where Nashville actually goes there and gives them a fight, I mean, have a good shot of winning the whole thing. The same thing with the playoffs. There will be games in there that probably because of the record that this team had last season, we know that well, that Nashville will probably have to go visit somebody who's strong mm-hmm. at the playoffs. And the performance is going to come closer to what we saw, especially in San Diego. Then, I mean, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, and I don't know. I brought this up to Brett, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it. You know, Nashville, a lot of their games they had, like that long stint of games where they had six of them in the month of, what, June or July? I think it was June. And they had like six games in May or April, somewhere around that. And they took care of business in the games where they needed to really win. Now, as for Nashville, they only have four matches, league matches, that is, and including, you know, the U.S. Open Cup, which is in September. But in the month of August, they only have four matches, two away and two at home. And to finish out the month of August, they're both at home. So my thought is, looking at FC Cincinnati and Philadelphia, both of those teams have about 5 to 7 matches in league play and against some tough opponents. Nashville's not too far out from the Supporters' Shield. Even though they dropped points in the last couple of away games, it doesn't mean they're out of it. I'm still on the boat of, you know, Nashville, as long as they stay, you know, they say slow and steady wins the race. If Nashville can stay slow and steady in the month of August and let, you know, mistakes happen for Cincinnati and Philadelphia, because I don't know who said this, but I was listening to a podcast that the East, it might have been Brett Kern actually, the East is going to eat away at itself. Yeah, Brett did say this earlier. The East will eat away at itself. And Nashville's already played Philadelphia twice. They have to go play FC Cincinnati in the early part of September. But besides that, this is favorable for Nashville. This schedule is favorable for them. And I think something that BJ needs to get back to when it comes to the lineups, you need to go back to Matthew Corcoran. I mean, I know he's getting minutes in Huntsville. I know that he's been brought back up with Nashville from time and time again. But we, as people that have watched this team all season, we've seen really good production out of Matthew Corcoran against teams that are at the bottom of the table. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about you need to take care of business against those lower tier teams in the bottom of the East and West. Well, St. Louis is one of those teams at the bottom. They're in 14th, I believe. Like, they should be a team where you put a Matthew Corcoran and a Gaston Brugman in the midfield.
I agree. I agree because, I mean, that would also, well, what you said is perfectly correct, and I agree with it 100%. And also, it will give some needed rest to some legs that he's going to need in the long run. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Tagset. I'm talking about Jaspek. Yeah, and Corcoran is a guy because what he has shown, not only because he likes him, is a guy that he can trust to do the job. And they're going to have to. I mean, there is no question about it because what happened in San Diego, that inability of Taxer and Jasbeck to actually play their game provoked that two guys, make a lot of trouble, cause a lot of trouble. I mean, what Chucky Lozano and Anders Breyer did against four defenders in Nashville was something to watch. They drove them crazy. Mm-hmm. And I believe, maybe I'm wrong, correct me if I'm wrong. It's not the Nashville, it wasn't every game, no. But I don't remember the rest of the year seeing Nashville defense so occupied by only two guys.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing they have to do is get, and the midfielders, San Diego midfielders, were not even right there in three quarters of the field when they started already feeding passes to both Lozano and Dreyer, and they really caused a lot of problems.
And that then
the other thing, before you go to it, the other thing, I don't know if I remember any other game where Nashville decided to play so many divided long balls over there. And they were being caught up there, and they kept doing it. And that's the one part that I got to say, as much as I like VJ, and he probably knows, I hope he does, in his system and everything else, I mean, I didn't like that tactic of I'm not going to say he's the one that actually decided to do that, but he didn't correct it. He didn't correct it. And he repeated itself many, many times during the game. Actually, Mukhtar did lose that ball for the goal like that. At the very end, what's the name that came into the right? Gaines.
Yep.
Gaines did the same thing, and the goal didn't score. But there were plenty of opportunities where Nashville kept doing that, dividing that ball up that front, and nobody was winning it. And which is unheard of for this team to be.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you make a good point with, you know, a lot of things. One, the defense being occupied by San Diego's attack. Obviously, you talked about those long balls that Nashville is, you know, known to do for the most part. But it reminds me of that movie. I don't know if you've seen it with Pep Guardiola. Take the ball, pass the ball.
Yes.
And they talk about the tiki-taka passing where it's very short, all the above. I think that's what Nashville needs to trend towards when they're in this pickle of getting. I think Nashville, they've caught themselves to the point where they have the tendency of always going to trust a long ball. Like that Andy Nahar long ball in the Columbus game was beautiful. That can't be the pass every time. Now, Nashville, when Jack Mayer's playing.
Am I wrong to say that was the old Nashville?
Was that the old Nashville against San Diego?
No, the old Nashville. Wasn't that the long ball trying to win it?
Yeah, that's a good inside joke, too, because every time Joe Willis had the ball and they were trying to cycle the ball around, Joe Willis would always kick it deep. It seemed like that was the default Gary Smith.
Remember?
It was like the default Gary Smith offense was, pass it back to Joe Willis and then kick it all the way up front and see what happens. And, that didn't bode well for him last season. And obviously we all know the result of that. But back to Nashville now, you make a good point with the defense. And I think Jack Mayer, I don't know if you know anything about this, Claudio, but I assume Jack Mayer has been dealing with that foot injury. Because I remember New England, BJ said that he was dealing with a little bit of a foot injury. And as of late, it's been Jason Palacios and Walker Zimmerman as the two center backs. I don't want to read too much into it, but I think it's something to bring up just because Jack Mayer, I think, has complimented whoever's been playing to the right or left of him well this season. Jack's done really good at putting those diagonal long balls we're just talking about now. He's done a really good job at putting those to either Alex Moyle or Ahmed Kassem, Jacob Schaffelberg, or whoever else is out there. I think the lack of speed from Walker Zimmerman kind of kind of sets Nashville back. I don't want to set them back a lot. I just think it kind of anchors them a little bit. And Jason Palacios, luckily, he's strong and physical like Walker, but he has the speed. He has that speed in the back that Nashville's been yearning for so long. But I think it's a little bit of a concern. What do you think?
I think so. But I mean, you know, I want to be fair here and say that Palacios and Zimmerman probably play, if you look at the whole thing, at the whole game, a pretty good game. But they never faced a team when we were so much lost in the middle. I mean, I don't think Mayer, even in his best shape, would have made any difference, because the problem was precisely in the middle. Yeah. And you know, I was pretty much surprised, to be honest with you, when I was thinking about what Nashville could do in order to revert things in the middle of the game. And I said, well, maybe, and you know, and then Gaston comes to mind, and I said, no, this is not a game for Gaston Brugman, because of the way things were going.
Yeah.
And that's why he came so late. Now, he made difference, though. He made a difference, because he was actually able to pull the ball down, kind of calm things down in the middle, and then we saw Nashville kind of producing stuff. He was actually even doing some very nice defensive plays. Now, that Gaston that we saw in those few minutes, if he could go 45 minutes doing that, then you could just switch right after the halftime. But honestly, I don't think that's a job he can do that often, especially against great teams. No. I mean, for so many minutes, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Having said that, he played a very well game, a very good game, and especially the game before, he did play well, very well as well. It seems to me that Gaston Brugman, for his style of play, if I was going to say something that BJ is lacking, is finding his correct partner in the middle. I think that's what it is. I mean, his game is not going to change. His name's going to be the same. He's actually doing great effort, trying to be more positive in terms of defending. But I'm not sure what his company should be there in the middle for him to actually not worry so much about returning back like most of them have to do, and producing the game he did. But
a little differently. I look at it as BJ sees Gaston Brugman as a plug and play type midfielder, like you talked about with San Diego, and how, you know, when Gaston Brugman's in the midfield, he almost calmed the play down a little bit. I feel like BJ picks and chooses the battles where he can put Gaston Brugman in the lineup and say, you know what, this is a game for Gaston Brugman. I think it suits his play well, to where we can slow the pace of the game down a little bit, make some more creative plays, kind of like against the Chattanooga game in Nashville at Geodis Park for the U.S. Open Cup match. I think it was the first match of the tournament for them. They had Gaston Brugman in more of that, as I like to call it, the Trey Cuartista role, that attacking midfielder role. That game suited him well. He was able to kind of cycle the ball around, make some creative plays. The Gaston Brugman that we both enjoy to watch. And yes. I think BJ Callahan looks at him as that versatile plug-and-play midfielder. Whenever you need him, you can rely on him to give you serviceable minutes. But as to your point, I agree. He can't go a full 90. He just can't. I think you give him a good 70 minutes, if maximum. But if you could get him off the bench for 30, that'd be great.
I mean, and you know what? We've always been struggle about defining who should play there instead of Johnny is the one that's been doing better, playing on the flank, especially on the right, and Kassam, Ahmed Kassam. But actually, Ahmed, when he came in, in San Diego, he played a very, very good game. But it was complicated. It was very complicated. He had to really struggle with a very one-on-one defense there in the middle. It has a lot of problems. But we both know what Nashville we want to see, but I'm not sure which one we're closer to at this point. Is that a fair question, Nick?
Yeah, I'd assume so. What do you see out of Nashville? What's closer to you? What do you think?
Well, I mean, what I've seen is that the team needs to be playing, has to stay with the scheme that BJ works all week. But then he needs to find some answers to the question of what if it doesn't work. What if the other team controls us the way Mikey did it this particular time? One thing that is positive, and I'm going to say it this way, that I like the fact that this happened now mm-hmm. with San Diego. I like it because it brings not those weaknesses, but I'm sure, like I said, BJ is already working on this and say, hey, well, guys, they caught us. They caught us in the process, right? Mm-hmm. We have to figure out how, if a team starts doing this to us in another game, well, we're going to have to come up with a good answer and actually have a shot to win the game. But at the same time, he needs to find the way that these teams in a game like this has to understand, and this is easy to say, I know, it's easier to say, that any possibility against a team like this has to go in the back of the net because you're not going to have too many.
That's fair. No, you're absolutely right. And to add on to that, I think the next four matches, excluding the Aston Villa match, I think Nashville is going to show a different style of soccer. I think because you said, you know, San Diego caught Nashville in the process. It, to me, it just seems like Nashville needs to pivot and show a different version of them so they don't show all their cards before the end of the season, or especially before Cincinnati in September. I think that's what Nashville's doing, is what they should be doing, is still playing their basics of everyone attacks, everyone defends, like BJ Callahan has preached to this team, but don't show too many of your tricks before FC Cincinnati. And that's on the road.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, one of the things that, again, and bringing back what happens, and then again, I'm not sure how much you have to give to each team because of the position and what they're playing. But in the game against Toronto, the team was able, or BJ was able with the guys, to find a very good balance between being aggressive, which is what he likes, you just mentioned it, and then being staying structurally sound. The team stays in the structure and the tactics stays sound. Was it because they actually play better, Nick? Was it because of the rival? I'm not sure what percentage I can give to any of this. But for instance, just to give you one example, Zimmerman played so well in that game. I mean, he was there. He kept his authority, helped the pressure, clean when he had to do it. I mean, you know. But then again, when it comes to San Diego, that high pressure actually backfired.
Yeah.
Actually backfired. I think Nashville should have just come back and say, well, guys, we're going to have to switch here because this is not working. They're finding many routes into our field, and we're going to have to kind of what was the game that they played? Wasn't it the game against Columbus?
It was Columbus.
That was Columbus, but it was here. Well, I believe, and I'm not. That's why I'm sitting here, and I'm not a coach. I believe something like that with a. Probably work better in a game like San Diego, and I wouldn't be surprised. We might have to say this. I wouldn't be surprised. It's like in a place like Cincinnati, he's gonna have to go to that structure if something similar happens.
Yeah, I think that's a very good assessment, Claudio. I didn't think of it like that. No, I think Nashville would have to kind of resort to something to that degree because again, it goes back to my point. Don't show too many of your cards. I think against Columbus. Nashville didn't show too much. They just waited until Columbus made the mistake. I think the next four matches for Nashville in the month of August, you can easily exploit teams by letting them make the mistake first and then countering on to that. I mean, that's what Nashville's done all season, but I think it's easier spoken on, except you don't have to be too elaborate with it, if that makes sense.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. And you know, it's just like, he's going to have a plan B. If to call it that way,
yeah,
against teams like this caliber, because there's plenty of those games coming up, especially games that maybe is going to be more difficult, or if the team starts for whatever reason losing points. I mean, for the listener right now, or whoever is kind enough to listen to us, Nick, well, we gotta tell them that. I mean, Nashville's gonna make the playoffs for sure.
Yeah.
Nashville's going to make the playoffs. There's no question about it. What position? Well, I believe right now that this team deserves to be, if not winning the whole thing, if not winning the
supporter shield,
which they have a shot at everything right now. Well, at least they have to be in the first four.
Mm-hmm.
Anything less than that, because of the season they're having or they have had so far, it would be sort of a failure. And somehow, you know,
Here's what I'm worried about, Claudio, is if Nashville drop any points in the month of August, like I'm okay with Nashville dropping points in a draw. I'm okay with that, but it only can be one match in the month of August. Only one. I could care less what happens with Aston Villa. I could care less. That's a warm-up game. It's a friendly, but it's primarily a preseason match for, you know, Aston Villa. But for Nashville, it's to keep your legs warm for the MLS season. That's what that is. Because you have too much time in between games from San Diego to St. Louis. That's almost 2 to 3 weeks. For this, Nashville only can drop points in one match in August. Because you know what's going to happen? Their first match in September, they take on FC Cincinnati at FC Cincinnati. We all know what happens in September. That weather changes. A lot of these players, minus Eddie Tagseth, because he's from Norway, they eat snow for breakfast. I mean, it's something that happens over there in Norway. But, like, I'm really intrigued to see what these guys do. I mean, for the most part, I think September, it'll be probably in the 70s, high 60s. But I'm curious. Will the weather kind of play a factor for these guys when it comes time to play Cincinnati? I mean, it may, but I doubt it. Overall, I doubt it, but it's just something to keep your eye on. But they have to be ready to take on Cincinnati head on, because if they don't, they let's say they drop points to FC Cincinnati and they drop points to one of the four games in August, then that match, October 18th in Nashville against Inter Miami, is going to have so many playoff implications, it's ridiculous.
It is. But at the same time, Nashville is play, for the most part, always very well in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So that's a positive stuff right there. I don't see what that should change. And, you know, if you take into account that Cincinnati might be, I quote here somebody who said that a tire team because of the League's Cup, then that would be an option that Nashville will need to explode and win. Maybe bring those 3 points in here.
Yeah.
Because a victory in Cincinnati not only will stress the fact that they always play well there, but also that will be very big implications in terms of the supporters' shield.
Yeah. And let's not forget the U.S. Open Cup that's in between all of this. You know, you take on FC Cincinnati. Let's say Nashville gets a 1-1 draw out of that. They're going to have to play their A squad. And see, this is where the schedule gets tricky for me, Claudio. If you're BJ Callahan, do you start Patrick Yazbek and Eddie Tagseth in the middle away at FC Cincinnati? Because right after that, not only 3 days later, you have the semifinal of the U.S. Open Cup that you'll be playing away somewhere.
That's a tricky one. That's a tricky one because, I mean, those are your guys right there. I mean, really.
More than likely in that U.S. Open Cup semifinal match, it's going to go more than 90 minutes.
Well, but now let's say he doesn't. Okay. Let's say just for the sake of what we're talking about or discussion here, let's say he doesn't. But how is he going to make sure? I mean, I could say, well, maybe he's planning to keep the ball away from Cincy. Well, Gaston can do that very well.
That's true.
He can do that. Here's my doubt. Who is he going to play instead of? Is it Jasbeck? Is it Taxet?
I don't know.
That's a tough one right there.
If I'm Nashville, you start Eddie Tagseth.
But then again, you need to start Eddie Tagseth in the next one.
But here's the thing, though, Claudio. We've seen, especially in this stretch of games or matches, this past couple of four matches against Philadelphia, Inter Miami, Columbus. I think he did start against Toronto at home. And then you had this last match against San Diego. 5 matches in a row.
That's what I'm saying. It's a lot.
It is a lot. But see, that's the thing. You go into the month of August, you don't have to play Eddie Tagseth in a lot of those matches. He could come off the bench if you want. A lot of these matches don't have a lot of implications. Yes, New York City FC playing for a potential borderline playoff spot. They're currently in a wild card spot in 8. But you look at Orlando, you look at Atlanta, you look at St. Louis. Those three teams don't really have much to play for. Orlando has something to play for a little bit, but St. Louis and Atlanta, not so much. So then you look at that, you go, you know what, Eddie, you know, rest your legs up. We need you in the month of September. We need you to finish out the season strong. We need you for the playoff push. So then that's where you go to say Matthew Corcoran and a Gaston Brugman. And correct me if I'm wrong, Claudio, but I would say the B squad when it comes to midfielders, we've talked about this, Matthew Corcoran, and then Gaston Brugman has kind of gone through the ranks a little bit. I think he is the number two rotation. I think it's Brugman and Corcoran that take majority of these minutes going into August, and then once September hits, it's back to Yazbek Yazbek and Tagseth.
You know what I would like to see when we're discussing about this, and I agree with you on the month of August. I mean, I would say that it would be, I don't know, I mean, we can only guess what BJ might be thinking here. He's always said from the very beginning, remember, if it's working, I don't change. Mm-hmm. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
I don't change, he said. So that we have to take that into account. But if he's able to find that partner, that guy that is going to give Eddie a good dress, and I'm talking about, of course, Corcoran, Matthew Corcoran. I'm talking even about Brian Acosta. Why not? I mean, he'd be happy to get minutes.
Yeah,
he's a good player. I mean, he might not be the first to go guy, but he might be the one that he needs in a couple of games or those games in order to rest either Jasbik or Taxi somehow. Now he needs to find that the right partner for somebody like Brian Acosta to play with. Right there in the middle, in order for this to make it work. But if that's the case, I mean, I think he's got the guys. I'm not sure how you pair him, though, for sure. He's the coach. I'm not the coach. He's the coach.
Right.
But one of them would be perhaps the answer that he might be looking for.
Yeah, and let's not forget about the center back pairings with Jason Palacios and Walker Zimmerman. I think you also have to change up the pairings a little bit when you go into the month of August. I think maybe you put Jason Palacios takes majority of the minutes, and then you have Jack Mayer to, you know, counterpart him, and then have Walker sit a little bit, because Walker, even though he's had his injury moments for the most part, I think he'll be serviceable. I just don't think he needs to be playing a lot of minutes in the month of August. I think you got to have your veteran players well rested going into September. But another aspect of this, we've talked about Johnny Perez a little bit. He's really come into his own for the most part. He's really developed into a true, complete player in that forwarding, that attacking midfielder role. This is a prime opportunity for BJ Callahan to say, Ahmed Kasem, here are the keys. I need you to show me what you really got. That's what I look at the month of August as. You have Ahmed Kasem and you have Jacob Schaffelberg. I think we know what we got in Jacob Schaffelberg. Nashville knows what they have in Jacob Schaffelberg. But I think we've talked about Ahmed Kasem as of late, just not really showing that extra ump. And yes, I've asked BJ multiple times, and he gives me the same exact answer. They're completely different players.
Well, they are, but still.
Yeah, but yet still, you have to have the same mentality to go after the ball every single time. I'm sorry. If you're going to preach everyone attacks, everyone defends, that applies to Ahmed Kasem. It does.
Yeah, it should. Why not? I mean, it's just the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
I mean, if Gaston Brugman, who's never done that particular job in his life, he has to do it right now in order to get minutes.
And he's doing it.
Well, he's doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. Everybody has to do it again. Now, are we going to say, we're not talking bad about any player. We don't like to do that. We never do.
No.
But I don't think we gain anything from that. But yeah, in all fairness, has Kasem done that or tried? Yes.
Does he need to
do a much better job? Yes, as well.
It just when he tries it, it doesn't work well for him. And I get it. He's more of that finesse archetype style player where you can create more. He's that creator role. He's like a Gaston Brugman 2.0, but in the attacking midfielder role, in that right side of the flank. He does a really good job at creating space off the ball. He does a really good job at getting between the lines, especially behind the back line. We saw that beautiful ball he had against Columbus. Getting in behind the line there, but I don't know.
He's got that creative flair, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. He has that creative flair for sure. So I guess
it's kind of an interesting player when we're talking about Kasem right now.
Mm-hmm.
We said already about how creative he could be, and he's got that composure that he can actually keep the ball, make defenders miss, and go in between them and somehow, and generate a lot of problems for defenses up front. But I'm not sure why he can't do something similar when he's coming back, because of his size. He's big.
Yeah,
he's a big guy. He's got long legs. Mm-hmm. You know, he can reach out and kiss, cause him a lot of trouble. But I guess it's part of his learning process, I guess. We have to live with it.
For me, Claudio, I look at it as Ahmed Kasem just needs the minutes. I think his confidence level, it was up here when the transfer happened to come to Nashville. I think his transfer value was through the roof, and he had the confidence to think, oh, this is the team. I can do whatever I want. And he scored two goals in the first two appearances. Yes,
I remember that.
He was on a roll. He was on fire. And then Johnny Perez happened. And Johnny Perez said, oh, hold up there, young buck. Hang on.
I got here first.
I got here first. I can do this too, you know. Yeah. And he's shown that he can be a complete player. I think, I'm not trying to compare both of them, but it falls in that category a little bit.
If I ask you this question a week ago, not a question. I'm going to say this, and you tell me what you think. I would have told you, hey, Nick, Ahmed Kasem is going to come from the bench like a lot of times he does. Uh-huh. He'd be one of the most positive players in San Diego for this team. What would you have said?
For him to be put in the San Diego match? Yeah.
But be one of the best players for the team there.
Oh, for San Diego?
Against San Diego.
I would have said, all right, let's press him. Let's press him, see what he can do. Because right now, I think that's a little bit of a.
But isn't it unlikely though? I mean, you would expect that from Jonathan Perez, actually. I mean, being at home, having his friends there, his family, all that stuff.
Yeah.
You would expect that from Johnny. But Johnny struggled against San Diego, didn't he?
He did. He did struggle against San Diego.
He did struggle, and then Kasem comes in, and actually, even in the few minutes he did, he looked really good. He looked good.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the things that players go through in different games that you say, well, Johnny's probably, I was expecting Johnny to actually pick apart the defense because of the motivation he had, especially after the press conference when we asked him questions about it. And he was so happy to buy and going back to California. Yeah. But just things didn't really work out for him. He played a lot of minutes, but I mean, they were able to control him. Part of that part, but again, most times when Johnny, who's been a brilliant spot for this team, most times when he goes those games is because Taxet and Jaspic are controlling the middle in a good way.
Yeah, I agree. I think for this time, especially when we kind of go back to what I just said, I think you got to get more minutes under the belt of Ahmed Kasem. And for Ahmed Kasem to prove, not only, you don't have to prove nothing to me. I mean, he's been a really good player for the most part. I just would like to see a little bit more of a tone-setting mentality. I think he's a quiet leader. I think he lets his play do the talking, which is fine. I'm one of those people that like to do that as well. If I ever get back in shape, but that's besides the point. I think for Ahmed Kasem, and also BJ Callahan, if you're going to start Ahmed Kasem, have him set the tone. You got to have Ahmed Kasem set the tone. That's the thing that bothers me. I think that, that's the pinpointing topic for me, is if you're going to start Ahmed Kasem, have him set the tone. And I'm sure setting the tone's a little different from Johnny Perez, but if you have the mentality of everyone attacks, everyone defends, and the way BJ Callahan starts games, they have the first kickoff of the match, they kick it out of bounds to the other team to set the precedent that we're here to come after you. We want to defend you. We want to attack you. We are all over you. That's the mentality they have. And I think
he needs to believe in himself a little more.
Yeah.
He needs to say, well, if BJ started me today, I'm his guy. I might not be his guy the rest of the game. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I'm his guy today. I'm going to believe it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to show it.
Yeah.
Like he did in that game when he came in and scored two goals. He's done enough for a few minutes. But, I mean, if I was a player, I don't like if I hear my coach, no matter in what condition, and BJ is not one that says anything wrong for the most part. He doesn't. But if I hear the coach saying, well, I like the fact that that Nick Fraser comes in very well for 10, 20, 15 minutes. I don't like that. I like my coach to say, I like the fact that anytime I start Claudio, he produces. He gives me the minutes I need. Yep. He gives me everything I need.
I agree.
That's what I like. That's what I want to hear. I don't want to hear anything that's about 10 minutes, 15 minutes from off the bench. No.
Because you know what that tells you? That tells you that player has a ceiling.
Yes.
The ceiling is 10, 15 good minutes. That's it.
And not only that, but it tells me that somebody else playing in my place before I get in.
Mm-hmm.
Every time. So, I mean, that's just what it is. And if he's able to actually gain there and give Johnny at this point more competition, well, and we haven't talked about a guy that was perhaps in the last two seasons one of the bright spots in this team, which is Jacob Schaffelberg.
Mm-hmm.
But what is he now? Third place?
Yeah, I think because of the Gold Cup, it kind of set him back
his
a little
injury
bit. And the injury too, it just set him back a little bit on the depth chart. But everybody still knows.
You can tell how pressure he is, right?
Yeah, there's a little mentally. Bit of some underlying pressure on him to produce. Yeah, I definitely can agree to that. That there is something there. I mean, don't get me wrong. Everybody still looks at Jacob Schaffelberg as the Ferrari. Okay, I look at him as the red.
I mean, yeah.
I look at him as the maple Ferrari.
I mean, if anybody can change the game, is him.
Yeah,
for sure. No matter if he starts or comes in from the bench.
Yeah, and that's the good thing about Nashville, and you talked about it too, about an example of a player not to be good for 10 minutes, good for, you know, whenever you need him. That's Jacob Schaffelberg. Whenever you need him, he's good to go in. And so to the point about pressure on him to perform, yeah, there's a little bit. There's a little bit.
Yeah, and so he's making mistakes that he never did before, but I think the bottom line is that pressure he's putting on himself to actually have not good minutes, but perfect minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to be perfect. He shouldn't have to be perfect. He doesn't need to be perfect. He just needs to be Jacob.
Yeah.
He's made mistakes before, but he's great. Make great plays. I don't know. We're probably talking about something that he's saying, "Oh man, you guys are wrong." Maybe, or hopefully we are. But he chose. He just chose in the game. I mean, that's what is happening. You know, he's trying to do too much sometimes, and he didn't used to do that. I mean, and the team right now perhaps is not playing his style of game either.
Yeah.
Remember how he used to be, long ball.
Yeah, I'd say long ball is kind of his thing.
Yeah, here goes Jacob, and he's got the reach of the bottom, the bottom line, and try to cross the ball over there. That's not how it is now, and that's probably affecting him a little bit. But again, if there's anybody in this team capable of playing better, I don't even time is him.
Yeah. Before I switch topics a little bit to Hany Mukhtar and Sam Surridge, what would you prefer if you were the coach? You got Andy Nahar as the right back. Would you prefer seeing Jacob Schaffelberg on the right side with Nahar? Would you rather see Jacob Schaffelberg on the left side to where he could cut in on his right if he wanted to and also have the opportunity for Nahar to play those long diagonal balls?
At this point, and I know where you're going, and I agree with you on that thought process, but at this point, the way things are looking, I'd like to have two guys fighting for the spot on the right and two guys fighting for the spot on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, one of the issues to me, I use that word, might not be an issue, but one of the things is, who is there when Will's not having a good game? Shouldn't that be Jacob, perhaps?
It should be.
Should be, right? Because he can do both things. Whereas, I don't see Johnny playing that well there. I don't see Ahmed doing it that way, but Jacob can do it. So, if anything, the one player he needs to come in for is
Alex Muil.
Alex Muil.
Okay.
Alex Muil play on that side. I mean, I like to see it because let those other guys fight that place. Let me fight here with Muil.
Yeah.
With that, and they are so different, and I like it.
Yeah.
And I like it. They present a different stuff for defense. So maybe that would be an option, but I don't know how much of that. I don't know how much BJ actually likes the cutting lefty on the other side, which is what he likes better with the three of them.
Yeah.
I think it's time to try Jacob on the other side myself.
I think so too. I think it'd be a refreshing thing. And plus, I'm not looking at the month of August as like for Nashville, this is the preseason where they can experiment things. But I think they have enough quality to where they can experiment stuff. Especially in the month of August against lower tier teams and near the bottom of the table, you know. But changing topics to the forwards, Hany Mukhtar and Sam Surridge. You ready for this stat, Claudio?
Go ahead.
Nashville SC have multiple goals from not only one player, but two. Hany Mukhtar and Sam Surridge both have double digit goals for the first time in Nashville SC. well, I wouldn't say first time in Nashville SC history, first time since the 2021 season when Hani Mukhtar had 16 goals. And ready for this? CJ Sapong, we haven't heard that name in a while, had 12. Oh. So right now, yeah, right now Hani has 11, Sam has 18. First time since 2021, since Nashville has had two double-digit goal scorers. It's impressive to go back to, you know, give more credit to BJ Callahan's system, but it just seems like these guys have really built some chemistry this past offseason and finally found their true niche in the attacking forwards for them.
Well, Nick, the numbers talked, and you already mentioned all of them. I mean, it's been a year so far, a season, where to see these two guys getting along, especially in the field, inside the pitch, the way they're doing it and producing, the way they're doing it's been amazing. And I'm sure BJ, Hani, Sam, and everybody else expects them to continue. Now, at the same time, I'm going to just put a little point in there in between and say, well, because neither one of them were the same in the last game at all, you know, and that cannot happen. That cannot happen because if anything, I mean, this team has perhaps answers in just about any position. Not as good. I mean, that's why I always believe there's starters and non-starters. I mean, that's just the way it is, the way I believe. But what if, for whatever reason, these guys are start having games like the one in San Diego? Who is going to come in there and make difference? I mean, I don't have anything about any player against anybody, but it's the distance between Sam and Hani and anybody else on the team playing those positions is just abysmal, to put it that way.
Yeah, there's nobody else really backing them up when it comes to collecting goals, that is.
So, in all honesty, if the team needed somebody to actually come in there because, Mukhtar was heavily marked on the last game. His timing was off, obviously. His rhythm was off because of the mark that the San Diego put on him. There was no spaces where he could move. They made sure they closed all the spaces. So at that point, obviously, any coach would say, well, what should I bring to the table that's different? Maybe. It's not his fault. I mean, this defense has figured him out for this game. I need to give him a rest and send somebody else and try something different. But, I mean,
I don't
know. Teal is not going to do it.
No. Teal's not going to do it. I think Nashville, if they want to switch things up a little bit, drop Hani into a deeper role almost. Not playing as a three midfield role, but just a little bit deeper near, you know, Tag Seth and Yazbek. Because I think it'll open more passing lanes between him and Sam, but also I think it'll just separate the lines a little bit between the back line and the midfield for their opposing teams. Now, nonetheless, if BJ's system, if he likes it to where Hani and Sam are pretty almost close to close, like shoulder to shoulder in the attacking third, then that creates the midfield line and the back line to be super tight, which is an easier opportunity to put a ball over the top to where you could possibly score in easier opportunity or just create another passing lane out towards the flanks. I don't know. It depends on how they look at it. But that's kind of my assessment is if they want to do something different, I think you have to drop Hani into a deeper role into the midfield.
And then in order to talk about what's about Sam and perhaps his soft game, just to put it that way, against San Diego, all we had to do is bring his own words. Remember when he told us in press conference how he likes, how he thinks produces more, which is having exactly what you just told us, having Hani a little bit behind. Mm-hmm. And maybe it could have been a little farther back at this point. And that wasn't there. And San Diego was able to put one guy, a couple of guys in between them, and the passes was just not there. And that's when the team started to send those divided goals over here, over them, but they were never reachable. They were always easy for San Diego's defense. Well, at that point, Nashville needed to come with some kind of an answer.
Yeah.
Either by, like I agree with you, sending Hani a little bit back or bringing at this point maybe Brookman earlier.
Possibly.
And make Hani and him get a little bit together. Maybe a 4-4, I'm going to say a 4-4-1. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that going to be what it is?
4-4-1-1
4-4-1-1-1 Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then that mean kind of pairing them up in the middle for Zurich to be able to move, looking for balls, you know, diagonals and stuff, not those long crosses,
right,
which didn't work at all. I mean, you can go back and watch that game, and I was like, wow, man. I was like watching it with Danny, you know, mm-hmm. and I said, why in the world you keep doing that, guys? You know, I kind of screaming. I'm here watching in my living room. Why you keep doing something that you don't do?
Yeah.
It's not working.
Doing something unfamiliar.
Yeah. And then that's the way, I guess the frustration of seeing another team kind of controlling the whole point, the tempo and the possession and everything else kind of took the best part of him. And there was nothing else that they could do. But I mean, that, like I said again, I'm glad it happened the day it happened.
Yeah.
And it was a visit, not inside Jody's Park.
That is very true. Because Nashville SC's home, I guess, unbeaten streak continues at 12 matches. Is that right?
Yes,
Claudia?
Sir.
Mm-hmm. 12 matches. Obviously, their total unbeaten streak ended at 15. That's a new club record. You know, it just seems in this Nashville SC 2.0, they just keep breaking records and setting new ones. But yeah, Nashville back in action August the 9th for MLS league play. They have that Aston Villa match coming up, I think, August the 2nd at 4 o'clock. They've pumped that time
7
up.
O'clock? No, 7 o'clock.
No, they bumped it up to changed. 4. They changed it.
Was changed.
It
was changed on the other way around, didn't it?
No, not 7 o'clock. They bumped it to 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Wow. I was gonna be there when the game was over.
Uh-huh. And you complain about me being late. Uh-huh. Nice try. But overall, Claudio, we've kind of discussed a lot about Nashville in the last couple weeks. I guess the best way to end this would be predictions for their match coming up August the 9th. It'd be a Saturday match in St. Louis. So I'll be out of town that weekend. I'll be in the deeper part of the South, let's put it that way, in Texas. So, what are your, I guess, predictions for that match?
Well,
what
before I go there, the best prediction already happened.
Oh,
remember somebody saying that Nashville was going to lose a game sooner or later?
I do recall that. I do recall
Walker Zimmerman.
Yeah,
Walker Zimmerman. In the middle of those wins, he said, "Well, I mean, guys, sooner or later we're going to bring." Well, that was the game. Nothing really to worry that much about. Nothing that's gonna, I mean, it's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. And where the team goes from here after that game is what's important. I do believe, so we're talking about this
St.
coming
Louis.
Saturday?
No, St. Louis.
Yep. St. Louis. Well, you know, I should say that that's a game that Nashville must bring back as a victory.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they're going to be, I think, and maybe, I mean, a lot of this is hope, I guess. But I believe that Nashville is going to go to St. Louis and say, hey, guys, whatever happened in San Diego is not going to happen here. 3-0.
Ooh, I like that. I was going to go around 3. I think I'm going to go 2-0. 2-0. And I think Sam Surge gets a brace. He gets 2 goals on the night.
Sam?
Yeah. I think Sam's going to capitalize and get the goals he needs to get that golden boot against the lower tier teams, just to boast the stats a little bit, because that's what Messi's doing.
I'm going to go the easy way.
Oh.
Sam 2, Mukhtar 1, or vice versa.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know if you can do that, but all right, I'll count it.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, I know. I'm messing with you. Yeah. Well, hey, Claudio, I appreciate it. As always, we have fun doing this podcast. Glad that everybody listens. A big, big reception for the Nashville SC fans. They love this Talking Calcio podcast. Glad we can bring it to you guys whenever we can. And we'll see you on the next episode. Ci vediamo.